Growing up in a cult complicates everything. The truth matters. The truth sets us free. You're listening to Out of the Shadows with Mary Murphy. Hello, one and all. From whatever part of the globe you're listening today, welcome and thank you for tuning in. After 4 months, I'm finally back to continue where we left off in interpreting cult lingo and culture as evidenced around Josh Duggar's trial, conviction, and sentencing. Thank you all for the care and kind messages while I was so ill. I really appreciate hearing from you. And welcome to all of the new listeners who have subscribed and commented during my absence. It was so fun to come back and read your messages and hear your thoughts on the first 4 episodes. Let's get down to business. This is the letter written by David Waller on behalf of Josh Duggar prior to sentencing for the child sex abuse material conviction. Child pornography is still the legal term. However, I'm passionate about advocating for the change of verbiage to child sex abuse material because children never consent to abuse. They are children. Not to mention the power dynamic inherent within sexual abuse. Therefore, I call it CSAM, not child pornography, or CP. Who is David Waller? Now, you might have heard his name on TLC's 19 Kids and Counting. I believe his wedding to Priscilla Keller, who is Anna's sister, was on one of the shows. I haven't seen that. You might be familiar with him from there. Who is David Waller in the cult, in the Institute and Basic Life Principles and IBLP's homeschool program, ATI, or the Advanced Training Institute? Born in 1986, David was 35 years old when he wrote this letter on behalf of Josh earlier this year. David's parents attended a basic seminar with IBLP 2 years before David was born. David is a second-generation member of IBLP, just as Josh, Anna, Priscilla, and I are all, and in my case, I was, past tense, second-generation members. David Waller was born and raised in ATI and IBLP. There's much history to discuss about David and IBLP. I'm going to save the bulk of that discussion for another day and read through David's LinkedIn account. David lists in his experience character first coach from 2001 to 2003, and that's an IBLP program or IBLP affiliated program. 3 other roles listed with IBLP and ATI include training coordinator / seminar facilitator from July 2005 to July 2007. Executive Assistant to the President of IBLP from September 2007 to January 2012, and Administrative Director from February 2011 to September 2020. David held official and trusted leadership roles in IBLP and ATI spanning for 19 years. Starting from age 15, to age 34. 2 years he does not list on LinkedIn, so we'll discuss those years another time. However, I do have reason to believe that he was still very closely involved in ATI during that time and IBLP. In summary, David Waller is and was very high in IBLP and ATI. That's one reason I can see for him to choose Priscilla Keller, sister to Anna Keller Duggar. Anna's marriage to Josh elevated the Kellers even more in IBLP and ATI. The match between David and Priscilla would be high ranking within the cult. David's About section on LinkedIn reads, quote, experienced administrative director with a demonstrated history of working in education management, personal discipleship, and focused on impacting the world for Christ. Skilled in nonprofit organizations, prison ministry, an administrative organization, graduated from Advanced Training Institute, end quote. Sounds kind of prestigious to hear, quote, graduated from the Advanced Training Institute, end quote, doesn't it? However, That is IBLP's home education program. We did not even receive diplomas from ATI. Many parents purchased a diploma from somewhere such as the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. I believe mine did. That's a little glimpse into David Waller and his position in IBLP and ATI. There's so much more to talk about, and we will definitely do that sometime because it's going to be good. Let's get back to David's letter. Here is David Waller's letter to the court. First of all, I want to point out that the letter is written on Fair Park Baptist Church letterhead. No address is provided, just the logo and name of the church. The date is March 10th, 2022. The letter is addressed to the Honorable Timothy L. Brooks, and the court information and address in Fayetteville, Arkansas is provided. David writes, "Dear Judge Timothy L. Brooks, as the senior pastor of Fair Park Baptist Church and as the brother-in-law to Joshua Duggar, I would like you to know that I have met and talked and prayed with Joshua Duggar, his precious wife Anna Duggar, and each of their children for many hours. I believe you should carefully consider the many factors that affect the discretion you retain in your power as you set the sentence for Joshua Duggar. Joshua Duggar is a friend and my brother-in-law for the past 10 years. We have spent a considerable amount of time together through family holidays, vacations, working together, and doing projects to help and serve needy people. Here are a few examples. It was Joshua Duggar who offered to help me finish a large deck project for our in-laws, giving up his time and money during Christmas week to complete a large deck with a handicap accessible ramp. It was his generosity and personal initiative that designed the cable railing system for the deck to keep everyone safe and allow wheelchair access to the Keller family's double-wide trailer home. It was the next year that it was Joshua Duggar's generosity and kindness that purchased and installed new appliances for his in-laws. It was Joshua Duggar that sponsored an automatic gate closer for the entrance to their home. It was Joshua Duggar's kindness and generosity that has allowed me to purchase vehicles at his cost, including a Honda Pilot that my wife and I enjoyed driving for a number of years as our family vehicle. It was Joshua Duggar that went out and spent several hundred dollars to decorate and organize our laundry room to make it efficient and beautiful. It was Joshua Duggar who personally donated $2,000 a month for the past number of years to support a struggling and needy widow raising her children. It was Joshua Duggar who has poured out his heart to his wife and children with special effort to love, care, and serve them. Once, while my family and I were taking a road trip with Joshua Duggar and his family, I observed one of his children misbehaving. I listened as Joshua Duggar stopped the vehicle, took his little one aside privately and lovingly, and patiently talked with his child. I was in awe at the tone and love he showed. On a number of occasions, I have been in Joshua Duggar's home for an overnight visit. I have observed him gather his children and read to them from the Holy Scriptures, the Bible, then pray and then have a beautiful time singing songs about Jesus while playing the piano. In Joshua Duggar's recent absence, I have enjoyed taking some of his boys to a Christian retreat for fathers and sons. I prayed with his boys while tucking them into bed. I have heard his young sons pray for you, Judge, by name, asking God to work in your heart so their daddy could be home soon. I have also heard them cry themselves to sleep wanting their daddy to be home. I remember this past Christmas their request, quote, "All I want for Christmas is my daddy," end quote. I have personally observed Joshua Duggar being a man of integrity and take considerable loss after selling a vehicle to a friend of mine at his cost. When the transmission went out of the vehicle a few months later, he went above and beyond the call of duty and replaced the transmission free of charge, even though he lost over $1,000 to do so. Joshua Duggar is a deeply religious and God-fearing man. He lives his life knowing that he will give an account someday to God for the choices and decisions he makes. He has publicly owned his mistakes and has been transparent about his faults, even when he knows he will be misunderstood, maligned, and attacked. He has also chosen not to own something he claims he has not done. I sat through much of the trial and listened intently to the arguments made by both the defense and the prosecution. I was there when the verdict was read. As a pastor who cares about the spiritual condition of people, I urge you to consider how much his wife and 7 children need him in their lives to be nearby for visits, accessible for communication, and brought back home to provide not just the financial, but spiritual guidance of his family. Sincerely, David Waller, Pastor, Fair Park Baptist Church. My first thought when I read this letter was about the letterhead, which I've already mentioned. And my first words were, run, run to the people in that church. David highlights that he's senior pastor and brother-in-law to Josh. Notice the way he talks about Anna as Josh's wife, as being a possession belonging to Josh. Side note, now, as I mentioned already, David is married to Anna's sister, so technically, Anna is his sister-in-law first, but there's no mention of that, just Josh's precious wife. And the way that David addresses the judge, quote, I believe you should, end quote. How arrogantly phrased to address the judge in such a manner. And there's the S word. What a dirty word. Should. This S word is a favorite in the cult community. Other survivors and I continue to work hard to remove this poisonous word from the cult upbringing out of our hearts, minds, and mouths. Hence, I call it the other S word. David goes on to call Josh a friend and describe basic family get-togethers and projects at the in-laws. Now, projects at the in-laws, that's pretty common within the cult. Visits to the in-laws, in this case, David mentions, are a week long, and it is seen as the kids' responsibility to take care of their parents. So it's very common for son-in-laws and sons and others to do projects for the parents when they come back to visit. And I think that that can happen in other families as well that are not in the cult. So that's not highly unusual. However, the extent of projects might be more because of the levels of poverty that some families experience in the cult and because of the limited other activities. For example, even if a family has a TV, they're not going to spend tons of time watching it, and it's unlikely that they would have like cable or a lot of the subscription services like Netflix or other things like that. A week is a long time to be around and would be very common to do these kind of projects. Moving on, David describes Josh as kind and generous. Frankly, David, I'm speaking directly to you, that simply does not cut it. Where was the kindness in Josh's crimes against children? And don't even get me started on generosity in regards to these crimes against children. That's sick. Purchasing vehicles at cost, organizing and decorating a laundry room. Why did your laundry room need to be beautiful, David? Seriously? These are the defenses for a judge to consider for a convicted felon of CSAM? Oh, that's right. Children are property. Children are to be seen and not heard. And most of all, children exist to make the father successful. Disgusted, I'm so disgusted. So the Honda Pilot and the beautiful laundry room versus human children. This comparison to me is quite an eye-opener, and I hope it is to you too, because children are humans. They're not anything like Honda Pilots and beautiful laundry rooms. They are worth so much more as human beings. David spills the beans again about these gifts to the widow, and we'll have to talk more about that in another episode. But here is another person who knows about the supposed monthly gifts to the widow. And I'm not saying those monthly gifts didn't happen. However, I'm saying David's talking about the gifts. Why do so many people know about the gifts? This is very suspicious. In the cult, giving in secret is highly encouraged because God sees and rewards that which is done in secret and the gifts that are given in secret. However, this obviously, it sounds as if the giving in secret did not happen in this situation with Josh. It sounds like many people knew, and it's another representation of Josh's arrogance and pride to make sure that all these people knew, or that perhaps, quote, accidentally, people found out about it. That often happens. I've seen it happen multiple times. So next is the paragraph about Josh, that Josh poured out his heart to his wife and children. And when I was prepping for the episode, I had to just stop here and move and go past it for a while, because this is such an intense topic, the pouring out his heart to his wife and children. The connotations about this phrase, I think it really needs its own episode too. The heart is central in so many things in the cult. And the rest of that sentence is Josh had special effort to love, care, and serve them. In other words, Anna and his children. And Josh pretty much failed there too. David claims Josh took his little one aside. Note again the possession, his little one aside, privately, and that David himself, quote, was in awe at the tone and love he showed, end quote. Wait, what? So how private was Josh's conversation if David could hear Josh's tone? Contradiction much? Was this a show? Was Josh trying to make sure that he was seen and heard in this manner? People in the cult are very good at putting up the facade and playing the roles and playing the part, and children are made to submit and made to comply right away. Sounds like a contradiction that David is making. However, be that as it may, David's attempt to paint Josh as kind and gentle with children does not stand up to what I know to be true about Josh's choices, actions, Josh's crimes. Nor would the victims of the sexual abuse portrayed in the child sexual abuse material Josh downloaded, possessed, watched, nor would their families agree. Actions speak louder than any words, and Josh's actions clearly prove children need protection from him, including the 7 children who call him dad, and perhaps especially those children. David's comment about staying overnight at Josh's home, notice not Josh and Anna's home, it's Josh's home, which may be seemingly innocuous to you, but it's not. The mentality of male dominance and possession permeates thought and word 24/7. Saying that he spent the night at Josh's house subtly jabs at the judge, jurors, and legal system. Kind of to say, look, if I will stay overnight in his house, he can't really be bad. Reading the Bible, praying, and singing, so what? This helps the facade. These actions have not prevented Josh from committing crimes in the past. Stop trying to use God to cover up and or excuse Josh's crimes. It's disgusting. As I said to someone today, covering up crimes and using God's name to justify the cover-up or even the crime itself represents the epitome of blaspheming God's name. Let me say that again. Covering up crimes and using God's name to justify the cover-up or even the crime itself represents the epitome of blaspheming God's name. Talk is cheap. What about Jesus' words in Luke 17:2? Quote, "It would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble," end quote. That's from the New International Version of the Bible. How many children has Josh made to stumble? And yet, David Waller, Pastor David Waller, you ignored these children. Shame on you. Even Josh's own children. As David writes about the boys praying for daddy to come home soon and crying themselves to sleep, the adults in these children's lives aren't being truthful with these children in an age-appropriate manner. These children need much support and professional trauma play therapy with a licensed counselor. My educated guessing from living in this cult community and under all the teachings, etc., these children are being led to pray this way, even to ask for their daddy for Christmas. The pressure on the kids is enormous. As a senior pastor, David, I think relaying this type of information about minors that aren't your children might be protected information. Maybe I'm wrong. Confidentiality for clergy is a requirement. Am I right, listeners? Let me know your thoughts. Again, children have zero rights under cult beliefs. David goes on and talks about money and cars. We don't care. We don't care about money and cars. We care about children. The court convicted Josh of crimes, child sex abuse material. Children, David, are worth more than any car or any money in the world. I don't see that in your letter. David's comments on Josh being, quote, a deeply religious and God-fearing man, end quote. Taking a deep breath here. Some of this is really hard. I have no nice words to say, and I have some very choice words to say that I'm not going to say on the air tonight, but a lot of choice words about this statement. However, this part on God-fearing links to some key cult teachings. Episode 6 will center on that teaching. I have a graphic to show you next time as well. Claiming that Josh has quote, publicly owned his mistakes and has been transparent about his faults, end quote. Well, that's a big claim. And if he did, the words that Josh used matter. And we'll talk more about Josh's statements in a future episode. Things are not always what they seem, especially with the cult lingo, lacing words with other meanings. David wraps up his letter by asserting Josh's innocence and his own presence in the courtroom. Okay, David, so you went to court, you listened, good for you. So what? If you truly cared for the, quote, spiritual condition of people, end quote, David, your actions in writing this letter would look significantly different. If you want Josh to spiritually guide anyone, what God do you actually serve? From my personal experience in 3.5 decades under the cult beliefs and practices, and in the 5 years of fighting for my freedom and my value as a human being, I was the child in a home brimming with abuse, but kept neatly behind a spiritual-looking facade. I was the teen repeatedly raped by an evil, evil man and blamed for tempting him under these cult teachings. I was the wife and mother who said, "This ends with me," and I fled. Spiritual abuse and sex abuse crimes, plus the cult teachings and practices and culture and brainwashing, results in big trauma. My heart is sad for the 7 children who didn't deserve to have any of this, who didn't deserve to have a father like this. To those 7 children, if you ever hear this, I'm in your corner, and I'm always willing to help you be free. You matter. I'm sad for the victims of the child sex abuse material. The impacts to those children and their families are not only life-altering, it's for their lifetime. The trauma and re-traumatization goes on. Thanks for listening. Thanks for caring about the truth. Follow me on Instagram and YouTube under Out of the Shadows with Mary Murphy. Subscribe and comment. Let me know your thoughts and subscribe on whatever platform you listen to this podcast. Thanks again for listening. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Ciao.